This is Alex Kraner.
This is Dave Collum.
This is Bruce Party.
Hi, this is Jeremy McKenzie, the Raging Dissident.
Hello, this is Maxime Bernier.
This is Danny Bulford.
This is Chuck Prodnick.
This is Vance Crowe, and you're listening to the Sean Newman Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, folks. Happy Wednesday. How's everybody doing today? Well, with government deficits running out of control, now might be the perfect time to diversify some of your hard-earned savings into physical money that can't be printed. Dun-da-da-da. Gold and silver, I'm talking. That's what I'm here. Silver, gold, bull. They're pretty cool to work with. They're offering a full suite of services to all you, help you buy, sell, and store precious metals. They ship discreetly right to your, fully insured, right to your doorstep. And if you've never tried that, I suggest trying it. And they're offering a special feature price on everyone's favorite silver coin, the Royal Canadian Mint Silver Maple Leaf. And it's not available on their site. It's only open to you lovely listeners. And because we're blowing up their phone, at least that's what I like to think, they're trying out this this text. You can text Graham. So I've changed out the ways to get a hold of them in the show notes. You can text Graham now. So if you're like, you know, not really interested, or have bought some, or I don't know, maybe you just want to say, hey, thanks for supporting Sean and the SMP. I would love it if you'd shoot him a text, say, yeah, I'm listening. Thanks for doing what you guys do. It allows Sean to continue to do what he does. For all information, silvergoldbull.ca, that's where you're going to find it all. Caleb Taves, Renegade Acres, the Community Spotlight. Shout out to Caleb Taves and the Renegade Acres for sticking around the SMP. And the S&P Presents returns April 27th in Lloydminster. Martin Armstrong is going to be virtual. Then you got Tom Longo, Alex Kraner, Chris Sims, Curtis Stone, Chuck Prodnick, and Mikhail Thorup. Full day starts early in the morning Saturday. Doors open 8:45. Show starts at 9:30. Lunch, supper, and it's going to be a fun night, a fun day. We got 29 tickets left. 2-9. 2-9, that's it. So we are closing in on a sellout. Would love to see you there. So if you haven't got your tickets yet, I don't know what you're waiting for, but there's 29 left, and I hope to see you there. And then Sunday morning, the Cowboy Preacher Tanner Nadeau and Cam Milliken, we're going to be doing a Sunday service, and I can finally announce that it is going to be at the Moose Lodge on the north side of Lloydminster. Look for a poster or two. I'm going to build one here, but I was just there last night. We've been bouncing around between a few of the different venues, just trying to find the right size and allow for kids to come. And so I'm going to have some details here soon about that. But essentially, if you want to bring your kids, you're more than welcome to. Either way, the Cowboy Preacher Tanner Nadeau and Cam Milliken Sunday morning, 9 a.m. That's going to be a fun little morning as well. So that's Sunday or April, Saturday, April 27th. S&P Presents Returns Cornerstone Forum. And then the following morning, S&P Sunday service. I don't know what to call it, folks. I don't know if it matters. The Cowboy Preacher Tanner Nadeau and Cam Milliken going to be live at the Moose Lodge here in Lloydminster. So hope to see you in Lloydminster that weekend. The Deer and Steer Butchery, they got a butcheress, a dealer in meat, mother of two who was born and raised in the small town of Wadena, Saskatchewan, which I'm told has the best Boston creams there. That's Amber. As for these Boston creams, I wouldn't mind trying one of them, just saying. She took her retail meat cutting at Nate, went and apprenticed at Real Deal Meats in Edmonton, and worked out in Ontario in the St. Lawrence Market, which is one of the biggest fresh produce, meat, and seafood vendors in Canada. And if you got an animal ready to roll, give them a call, 780-870-8700. She's looking to get her hands on your stuff and get you rolling. So if that's something up your alley, if you want to go meet her, if you got something coming up, reach out to Amber, 780-870-8700 with the Deer and Steer Butchery. Erickson Agro Incorporated at Irma, Alberta. It's Kent and Tasha Erickson, family farm raising four kids, growing food for our community and this great country. Okay, April 1st, right around the corner. I want to remind everybody about Substack here. Starting Monday, 2 years of full-time podcasting, and the Substack paywall will be going on April 1st. And the first thing we're going to do on April 1st is we're going to release the Discord channel to people who've paid for the Substack paywall. So the lovely thing about that is if you're looking to interact with some of the SMP community, we're going to try and foster and build that out, and we'll see how it goes. So that's going to be April 1st if you So dare, if you so choose, head on over to Substack. Okay, let's get on to that tail of the tape, shall we? A plumber and a couple of mechanics, the old boys join the third installment of the Guardian Blue Collar Roundtable. I'm talking about Harold Steffen, Keith Wells, and Brian Southgate. So buckle up, here we go. Well, welcome to the Sean Newman Podcast. Today I'm joined by Harold Steffen, Brian Southgate, Keith Wells. In a blue-collar roundtable sponsored by Guardian Plumbing and Heating. And it's an unusual one. So for the watcher, there's no video because if I'm going to have all technical problems, why not have it happen back-to-back days? And that's just, I got tired of it, so I pulled the cameras out. The old boys decided that that was okay. And so we're going to have a little bit of fun here. The idea for this roundtable was essentially the old boys, and I don't mean that you feel old. I just mean you're a lot older than I am. And anyone that's been on the podcast yet, when it comes to a blue-collar roundtable, obviously, Harold, your son's been a part of one. And then last month, it was Quick Dick McDick and Chase Barber and the Crackpot Farmer. So on here, we can go wherever you guys want to go. That's the whole point of these roundtables, to try and give the blue-collar man a little bit more of a voice and just see, you know, where the conversation leads us. I was chuckling because, you know, like here I'm waiting, you know, I'm like, none of these, like, obviously Keith and Harold know each other, but Brian being an implant into this and then Keith being in the last minute call up last night, I'm like, well, I better let him feel comfortable in here before we get rolling. That all being said, what I want to do to start is I want to go around the horn here. We'll start with Harold. I just want people to get used to your voice and then a little bit of your background. It doesn't matter how far you want to go. You want to talk for 10 minutes, we got the time. If you want to talk for 2 minutes, 30 seconds, it doesn't matter. Just so people know who you are. And then from there, we'll jump into a whole myriad of things. And please don't feel like it has to come back to me. You guys were having a lovely conversation. And that can be exactly what this is. I'm just kind of a fly on the wall trying to put different people in this room and see if some magic happens. So we'll start with Harold.
Yeah, good morning, Sean. Great to be here. Thank you very much for having us on this morning. It really is an honor. You know, I've gotten to know you pretty good. My boys love you to bits. And yeah, we've spent some time, even the two of us. And it's great to be here. We love your show, and you're making an impact as a mentor in your own way. You're encouraging not only the three of us, but you're encouraging those out there in the world to start talking a little bit. And I really appreciate that. Myself, I love mentoring. I love being, I know that back 40 years ago when I was a drunk and an alcoholic and snorting more cocaine than I could afford to buy, but I still found it. And I was a mess. And yeah, I walked away from all that 40 years ago. I got 40 years of being clean and sober. And at that time, I had two kids that my wife said, how are they ever going to have a life? And yeah, today we have six kids, all married, normal, beautiful marriages. We have 25 grandkids, and we get to be a part of people like you and the people sitting here today.
Well, and my fun story before I move over to Brian is someday I hope my kids go back. Now you're like episode 6. Oh, something. I don't know where we're at, but there'll be quite a bit of content. But behind closed doors, I tell a story about Harold. When we were first starting up the men's group, that's how I knew this bulletproof coffee was probably coming today. when we first started up, it was like we met in your old shop right off of Highway 17. And for the people who aren't in Lloyd, that probably means nothing. For the people in Lloyd, you know what I'm talking about. And it was this really weird experience where it was Dustin, myself, Blaine, and Joey. We met and we were talking about this men's group idea. Hey, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. And I'm walking home and Harold goes, Sean, can I talk to you? I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And you proceeded to ask if you could pray for me and that there was a war going on for my soul and a whole bunch of things. And I remember being like, that was maybe the strangest thing I've ever been a part of. And then as time has gone on, I'm like, that may have been the most important thing to happen to have you do that. So I've told that story lots behind closed doors, and to be able to share it across from you today and have you in here. Yeah, honestly, it's an honor to have you sit across from Harold.
It's great to be here too, Sean. You're a fine son. I kind of like to draw younger guys in as a son because that's how I'm going to treat you.
Brian.
Yep, Brian Saltzgate. And good morning, Sean and Harold.
Keith.
Boy, me and names, I taught for
I need
so
to
many.
Put name tags on everybody, did I?
I taught so many years to try to learn all the names of your students within the first couple of days. It was tough. So, yeah, I was in automotive tech for years. I started working on vehicles when I was 15 and kept on it. Worked for GM dealerships across Saskatchewan for quite a while. Then I taught at Kelsey, SIAS, SAS Polytechnique, whatever you want to call it. Had the opportunities to teach over in Africa for a while as well, teaching automotive instructors. And when you say mentoring, that's basically what it became. And I still have students today that'll call me up. We've got a problem with a vehicle. What do you think we got? If we can't fix it, can you come and help us? And I say, sure, anytime. I work with my boy in Calgary a lot at Chestermere, at his restoration shop. My wife and I still live in Saskatoon, and we try to split our time and keep it civil. And sometimes I maybe stay away a little too long, but like I say, it's wherever the work takes me, I go. And Deb really enjoys it. She comes with me a lot of times. We both drive classic cars. I've got a 1953 Triumph TR2. She's got a 1952 Henry J., which is a rare car made by the Kaiser Fraser Company. And
is it sad that I don't know either of those cars?
Well, the Triumph you would know.
No? I can show you pics. We have pictures. And
it shows my car history we're going to have to take a look at some pictures is what we're going to have to do. Yeah. And then did you bring it this way?
Not today. No, the Triumph TRU, it's an open car. Basically, there's no windows in it. You pull a roof up on top. It keeps the rain from coming down, but it doesn't keep from coming inside. The Henry J is a compact car made by the Kaiser Fraser Company in the 50s for 51 to 54 only. And a lot of guys use it in drag racing because it's very light. And actually, that was where I got my very first car is the Henry J, and I built it as a drag car. And it would run a 12-second quarter mile all day long. So, but I still have that one, but it's sitting in the trailer right now, waiting to get time to fix on it between customers. So, but that's where I come from. The wife and I also attend a church up in North Battleford, or Saskatoon. I mean, we came from North Battleford originally, and we attend a church in Saskatoon. And we also, when I'm here, I go to a church with Zane as well, same time. So we kind of keep back and forth. I put a lot of miles on a year, I'll tell you. Yeah, so, but glad to be here.
Well, and thanks. Zane texts me back and forth, Brian's son, pretty much daily. So shout out to Zane for suggesting you and giving me your entire career history of this is why he needs to come on. So happy to have you in studio, and thanks for making the trip out. Keith.
Hey, I'm glad to be here too. I guess you got to watch who your friends are. Sometimes they get you into all sorts of things.
I'm curious, what was the call like last night?
I don't want to was my first response. I probably, anyways. So,
but you got to tell them the end of it. We could be in jail by morning.
Well, I listened to the 2-hour one with Joey and those other two guys there. And I'm like, well, if we get into all this stuff, anyway.
Isn't that the state? Isn't so that good. The state of the world where you could be in jail for just talking on a radio show? Yes, I get it. But what's your background, Keith? Where are you from, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, I was born and raised just south of town here, 40 minutes, I was blessed to be born into a Christian family and attended a terrific church in Neilburg, and I think the biggest thing all through my mentor life was just terrific people. We had terrific people in that church and terrific people in the community and everywhere we went. And then I moved to Lloyd in grade 10 and 11, and a great church with incredible people. And then I started working at a service station, and then a guy hired me to wash parts and stuff for big trucks, and then I started dating his daughter, and then I married her, and then I said yes the second time and took over the business, and I've run a business and been a partner in a business now for 30 some years, and Lloydminster's been good and had three kids, got seven grandkids, and they're spread out from Edmonton to Toronto to Denver and keeps us busy just being so that the kids know who we are. Like, that's the big thing. That's our world right now, is just being parts of their lives and being, you know, who they want to talk to on the phone every night. That's the thing.
And today in the old boys round table, you're the young one. I mean, I am definitely the young one, but sitting around this table, you're the young one. I didn't think you probably were signing up for the call last night. You're like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Jail. Okay. Maybe not, but okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, by the way, you'll be the young one. I don't know. Hey, what are you doing? Okay. Before we start, I want to make sure I do this before we go any further. So one of the things for coming in studio is teamed up with Silver Gold Bull for the year 2024. And so everybody gets a 1 ounce silver coin for coming in. It's kind of my, I don't know, tip of the cap for anyone willing to come in and share their thoughts and be in studio. And I love in person more than anything under the sun. It's so much better than doing it virtually and trying. It opens up the world, but it's not the same as having somebody in person. And when I had Silver Gold Bull come on late last year, we talked about what we could do to make, you know, more, you know, like enticing, if you would. Yeah. So most people don't know it's coming, but as a show of appreciation, it's a silver coin. So thanks for making the time and the trip, you know, for coming into the studio and doing this. Have any of you got silver buried away under? We're not going to talk about that.
Silver is a good one to hang on to, I'll tell you. I have a little bit, a touch of gold, but boy, silver is the one to hang on to. And
so in the podcast with Joey, you were going to investigate colloidal silver, so now's your chance. Although we only have like 4 hours, right?
Yeah. Just got one quick story, and that's it, and then you'll know it all. 21 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with serious cancer. I want to just say a little word. I got the greatest wife on the face of the earth. She got me kicked out of high school. She was so cute, I couldn't learn nothing in school. The principal called me in the office, said, "Stefan, you're going nowhere. If you'll leave the school today, pack your bags and never come back. I'll give you a grade 10. I needed a grade 10 to get into Kelsey.
Yep.
And I had a 67 Mustang sitting in the parking lot. And I tell you, I was a vapor trail. But at 21 years ago, my wife got cancer, breast cancer, and it didn't look great. She had the operation. After that, we had an appointment to go to the cancer clinic, and I'll tell you, her and I did a lot of talking. My wife researches everything. There's nothing out there that she doesn't research, and she researched this well. We went to the cancer clinic, really nice 30-some-year-old Oriental girl, Asian girl. She told us what was going to happen, what each session was going to be like. It was going to take 4 to 6 months to get it all done. And after she was all done, my wife nicely said to her, "Well, thank you for your time, but I'm leaving here today and I'm never coming back." And she went from being a beautiful little Asian girl to I don't want to say, but she was not a nice person after that. She said, "You have to come back." My wife said, "I don't have to come back." And listen, we walked out that door. And today, 21 years later, my wife's healthier than she's ever been, strong and a champion for being healthy and well. And I'll tell you, if you need any information, that girl can tell you. And she's just championed how the health of our family is. We're all in better shape today because of that. And we learned about colloidal silver back then. I was on antibiotics when I was 4. I had a kidney disease called Bright's disease. It shut down my kidneys. And Bright's disease, if you look it up, is nobody recovers from it, they say. I went into the hospital at 4. I spent 4 months in the hospital, 4 to 6 months. And then I've been on antibiotics ever since, 3 to 4 times a year, tonsils, sinuses. My immune system wasn't great. Well, 21 years ago, when she went through that, we were introduced to colloidal silver. I tried colloidal silver. I'm one of those guys that, oh, another snake oil salesman thing. I thought, this is bizarre. I said, what next? I am at 21 years with not a drop of antibiotics. My tonsils have never been infected since. I've had no infections. I have had pneumonia twice since then because I was in a welding shop and I was doing a lot of welding and grinding, and I ended up with pneumonia. But you know what? I doubled up on the silver, and Today,
so, what are you doing? Just what are you doing with colloidal silver?
Well, I just you can use it for superficial on your skin when you got a pink eye.
But first, tell them. Like it's 12 parts per million.
It's 12 parts per million. That's regulated. That's in your stores. You can go to Sangster's or Nutter's. That's what it is. 12 parts per million is the standard, and that's what I make. And I shouldn't say I do make it because I bought a machine out of a high-tech company out of California because I wanted good because my family, our kids and my children all use colloidal silver. And so I thought, well, I'm going to provide them with silver, and it's kept them all healthy. We're on to it. My wife and I, I'm 68, and she's 65, and we're on no medical medication.
So you're spraying it in your mouth then?
I spray it in my mouth. If I want to rinse my mouth out, if I ever had to wear a mask back in those fake days, I would spray the inside and the outside of the mask too. And it's silver. If you look back, military people in most nations were given a parcel of stuff for going to war. And one of the things was a silver coin, a 1 ounce silver coin like you gave us right now. And that was there to put in their water and their milk or anything to preserve it and keep it clean so they wouldn't get sick.
Jeez,
silver
Louise.
Is a phenomenal thing. Royalty in the past always used silver. They were called blue bloods because it turned their blood blue, but they're always healthy. They ate off of silver, everything.
But they probably were taking more than 12 parts per million.
Right, but they're taking more than 12 parts per million. So anyway, I got 21 years in with no antibiotics, and I'm on no medical pharmaceutical stuff at all. And so anyway, I'm just saying that's what our family does. What anybody else does is up to them. But we have found this is a real blessing to our family, and it's great. So there's my little pitch on colloidal silver.
Well, I have a bottle of colloidal silver that you gave me sitting on my bedside table. It's more of a paperweight at this point, but now I'm going to wake up and spray it in the old mouth and see if anything changes, right? I didn't realize all the properties of that.
Oh, there's no end to it. It really is no end to it.
You could do a whole show on that.
Yeah, you could do a whole show on that easily, yeah.
Well, the three of you have, thanks for that. Anytime I give away a piece of silver in your brain, I'm like, I wonder if anybody collects, obviously. And then most of them that do are like, we're not going to talk about it. But I'd never seen that coming. So thanks for sharing
that.
Well,
if you look on this.
Open up some doors.
Yeah, on this, it's 99.99% silver. That's how pure it is. That's the purest you can get. Now, when I looked at it immediately, I thought we got here 3,000 to 4,000 gallons of pure colloidal silver.
That's holy cow.
So there you go, folks. As you're preparing for the end of the world, and you're wondering what you need, a little bit of silver will go a long way.
A long, long way. You betcha. Yeah.
Wow.
The three of you, how do you move on from that? Three of you have been talking about mentorship.
You haven't heard nothing yet.
Three of you have been talking about mentorship. You know, when I asked, one of the things I try and do when I bring a group of guys in, or women for that matter, is like, what's heavy on your heart? You know, that's a thing that Joshua Allen gave me, and I think about that often, is like, what's pulling on you? And the one that came around the bend, as I look at the three guests today, was mentorship and the importance of that. I don't know, where do you want to begin and who wants to hop in? Fire away.
Well, it's interesting, every time Harold and I get together, we're just telling stories. We've only known each other for a few years, but our stories are exactly the same and completely different, with his upbringing in the family that his experience and my experience, but we have this desire to mentor, and it's not even a desire or a mental thing. It's just, it's a desperation that your children and those kids around your children and just all these people that you're part of, that you help them to understand what was taught to you. I realized at a family reunion a few years ago that the Wells part of our family is a huge culture from a logging camp situation. So my dad was the youngest of six brothers, and there was a girl just older than him, a sister. She's the only one left now, but a few years ago there was just her and dad, and then dad's second oldest brother's son was just about the same age. Anyways, they got talking around the campfire about this logging camp experience, and Meanwhile, my nephew's over cutting wood and whacks the axe into his ankle and takes a big chunk off it. And most of the Wells guys are laughing and giving him a bad time. And it all comes from this culture of all these brothers and brother-in-law, all these people that worked at this logging camp 6 to 5, 6 days a week. You know, there was no room for mercy. Like, you had to man up to every situation. There was nobody's going to just give you, you know, that you were going to have to deal with what you did and the stories. So I watched that culture since that time, like 6, 7 years ago, and how it is what we are as a family. And you'd just as soon poke somebody's pain as, you know, go over there and try to make them feel good. And all these things of just meant of teaching people to stand up and take responsibility. But a situation like that designs the culture of your family for years to come. That's my point. Those relationships of those brothers was put into our family, a relationship experience that couldn't be from anything else but living together, existing together, working together, being together, and driving each other crazy together. And so then you put it into church experience where you listen and you hear and you watch and you see. And so then, you know, we always tried to have a crew of kids around our kids. And everywhere we went, we had truckfuls of kids. And so you try to teach them, you know, this is the way it's done, and this is right and that's not right. And this is what's going to happen if this is done. And so all the way through, you just are mentoring. You're either being mentored or you are mentoring. And so we just share stories back and forth. And it's always interesting how so much we're the same in that we have this desperation for our kids and then our grandkids and their friends and their groups of people around them to stand up, be responsible, be leaders, because you're going to be leaders. Like, that's just, there wasn't an option. And so that's the start.
Yeah, when you mentioned that about the kids, I never did mention mine. We got 4, 3 girls, 1 boy. And now I've got 4 grandchildren and 3 boys, 1 girl. So it kind of flipped around. And when you said your kids being spread around, when we were growing up and our kids were growing up and getting young, there were days we'd have up to 20 kids show up at our house. Each of them would bring a bunch of their friends home. And Deb always made fresh cookies, fresh bread. And so if they knew Mom was making cookies for the day, the kids came over. Those cookies never lasted.
Kids are simple.
Gone. So, my one daughter still lives in North Battleford, and one in Saskatoon. One's now in Montana now. She's been in Montana, Oklahoma, Kansas, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and now back to Montana. She married a Yankee. She was going for a pilot's license out here at Three Hills and met this young, she's short, like 5'0" and 110 pounds, dripping wet, right? And she was getting picked on one of the streets in Three Hills there, and this big strapping boy come by and, "You leave her alone, she's a friend of mine." Well, that was the start of it, and they're still together. They got one little girl, Kylie, and she's a handful, just like her mother was. But they, when you say about mentoring, a lot of those kids now, even the ones that run around with my grandsons and that, they call my wife grandma. Like, so it still comes around.
Yeah. So, oh, absolutely.
It's pretty neat.
You don't have to do much. That's
no. No, you just have to be a person.
You just have to just relate to them.
Yep.
And they know fake. They know the real thing. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know. As a mentor too, you know, I've really taken that on because I really didn't recognize it till later. Like Tucker Carlson and Jordan Peterson and Glenn Beck will tell you, the greatest mentor of all was Jesus Christ. There's your benchmark for a mentor. That's the mentor. And if you watch him, you'll always be the great at being a mentor. And, you know, I look at when I first walked away from drugs and alcohol before that, like Keith, I admire you so much, and probably you too, that you guys have known and been in churches all your life. You've been into missions and all this stuff. And I didn't know none of that really before, anything like that. And yet, once I did walk away from that world of drugs and alcohol and pornography and everything, and my wife and I remember right after we walked away from it all, we stood and we said, we're going to do everything we can to raise this family in a home without any of that, and show them you can have the time of your life without any of it. And that's what we stood on. And today, you know, I think of Blaine there. He's you know, I think of the mentors through Jesus, the mentors in my life, you know. And, you know, I've got adult mentors that have been phenomenal in my life, you know. Dave Reimer out of Winnipeg, south of Winnipeg, he mentored me for a long time. And he just great. My wife, I call her a mentor through Christ in our marriage. Blaine, our oldest son, a mentor to me through Jesus for our family. Mm. He was, you know, maybe I was the dad and the authority, but he was the leader. He's always been a leader, and he's a great leader. Hey, Dad, whoa on that, you know, because he'll keep me kind of in check, you know, keep the boundaries, you know. But, Joey, he's the go-getter and crazy as a cut whole bear bobcat. And Michael is our gentle giant. He's a phenomenal tradesman too. And then there's James, who's now a high-tech HVAC also in Abilene, Texas. And then Victory, our baby. And Jackie, whoa, I got to go back to Jackie. Number two is Jackie, our second oldest daughter. She has got more jam and more clout than She grew up in town, never was a city girl. She married a farm boy, and they lived on a farm for many years, raised their family. Now they live in Florida, and she bought a business there. Can you imagine that? A Saskatchewan girl buying a business in Florida.
In the last couple of years, yes, I can imagine.
And they're doing great. And then Victory, our baby Victory, who wasn't supposed to be born, wasn't supposed to happen. And today she's a mom about a year ago to her first child. And, you know, I just look at these kids, and through mentoring and loving them, our daughter got involved in a cult, Victory and Jackie. And one of the things that both tell you is, Mom and Dad, we knew always that you never would stop loving us, and we knew where we could be safe. And yeah, after 14 years in a cult that they were in, and it was deep, they walked out of there. And yeah, today they're beautiful, beautiful community people and parents and everything.
Yeah. That's pretty heavy. I hate to pry, but I'm like, cult. As a parent, you know, I got three young ones. So when you guys are all laughing about your kids and everything, and seeing how they've grown and mentoring them along the way, and then the grandkids and everything, I got a soon to be 8, soon to be 7, soon to be 5, right? So that's the stage we're at right now. One of the things I think, you know, as a young parent that I learned from all of you is, I'm like, you know, tough times are coming for us all. You probably all have stories. Harold just shared one that, you know, just briefly, that's like, oh man, I don't think any parent wants their kid to end up in a cult. I don't think that's something that's, you know, on the docket of things to check off. You know, they got an A on their report card. They scored a goal in last night's game. Oh, and they joined a cult. Don't think that's on it. But one of the things I do realize sitting here is, like, no matter what it is, there are going to be tough days ahead when you're a parent, whether it's with your spouse or whether it's with your children or some outside factors, the external family and everything. Those pressures are going to come for all of us. And so you have to be communicating with your spouse. You have to continue to build and foster that relationship and really grow it. When your daughters are in a cult, was it just... communication cut, like they're not talking to you, or was it different than that, Harold? And I apologize if I'm prying.
No, that's okay. No, it's perfectly fine. People need to know. But no, we are fortunate that it didn't quite get to that. It could have. It was borderline some days, but we have an incredible son-in-law, Terry Brown, who did some research after 14 years. He felt something wasn't quite right, and he'd done a little bit of schooling on cults years and years ago at Briarcrest, and he knew a little bit about it, and things were at a point where he was getting a little worried. And because up till then, he was totally in. And he did some research on it. And next thing he knew, this is a full-blown by-the-book cult that we're in.
And if I may, when you say he did a little bit of research, what were the things that really, because who knows, maybe somebody listening to this is in a similar situation. Right. Or heck, maybe at some point I'll walk into something and not pick up on what it is. What were the little things that he's like, this doesn't feel right?
Well, the control. He finally caught on to the control wasn't healthy. You know, none of them could buy a house. None of them could buy a vehicle. Nothing. You could do nothing without permission and guidance by this leader. And he was evil to the core.
Is this in Canada?
In Saskatoon.
Is it still going on?
Yeah. There's still 100 people in there. And it's hard. And it's called Lamb of God. It is just controlled, and it's falling apart right now. That I know. More and more people every month are coming out. My daughter Victory and Terry and Jackie are all there. They mentor and help these people as they come out because they know nothing. They don't know how to do anything. They don't know how to live life. And it's been hard. But we had to, my son-in-law, Terry, he found out and he phoned one night and says, we're out. We're coming out. Mom and Dad, would you come and stay with us? Because his parents were in it and still are. And so he wanted us to be there. And so we were there with them when they came out because they were scared of the feet, what would come back. Yet 2 years later, our daughter, who is still in there, our little one, Victory, we had to do an intervention, which was, we got a guy out of Louisiana, came up here, 2 trips. He was very expensive. But he said one thing, he said, what are you willing to give to get your daughter out of there? And we said, we'll give whatever, anything, everything. He said, okay, that's what he needs to know. And he came twice, prepped us, and then we did an intervention, and it was hard. The first day of the intervention, my daughter comes, and she wants to run out on us. And she looks at me and said, Dad, I'm okay. Help me, Dad. Don't let this happen, Dad. I'm okay, Dad. Please help me. And it's the hardest moments of my life was that I had to stand back and let my daughter go through that to realize the truth. And he needed 5 days. And we were in Cochrane in a hotel. And we were supposed to be there for a family weekend. And after the 5 days, she went back to Saskatoon and said, I need time. She spent a week with God. And the following Saturday, she phones and says, Mom and Dad, come get me. I'm out of here. So it wasn't easy. And it was hard. But you're right, Sean. We're all going to go through stuff in our lives. And it's our faith and our love, what God gives us, what the Lord sent us, and are we willing to go the distance for our family?
Wow.
Yeah, the realization of evil and the realization that God is powerful above all of
that. That's right.
But evil is so real.
Yeah.
And we just don't give it the, and it's in our hands. It's in our, you know, it's just so accessible and it's so sneaky and we don't fight against it hard enough.
What's that famous singer right now? All these kids love her. What's her name?
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, Taylor Swift. So I heard a parent say, she's not so bad. You know, off the stage, she wears sweatpants and she helps some charities, but her ultimate goal is, and she said it, evil is cool.
Yeah.
So don't tell me she's out for the best well-being. I got a grandson who likes her a lot, and he's being a little blinded. He's a good young kid. He's a strong Christian kid. He's a volleyball champ in the States and everything, but he's falling into this deception. And I'm trying to find what I can do to help as a grandfather, you know, and be a mentor to him.
Yeah, my wife does a lot of research, especially on our late neopolitics, right? So she looks at all those new bills that are getting passed and everything. And when you talked about Taylor Swift, I thought, oh boy, because there was one, Deb said, she was watching one of the shows or reviews on her and something about the devil's the best or whatever she's saying in one of her songs, that holy cow, like, this is Taylor Swift. Yeah, I guess we're not listening to her much.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
She does a lot of research, that girl.
Same with my wife. And we have to be there. We have to be willing to step in and help our kids. And maybe they're going to be upset sometimes at us, you know, raising 6 kids. My wife and I, we were just talking about it just the other day. You know, we love the teen years. people say, look out, when they get to be teens. But we enjoyed it. Oh. Keith will tell you the stories too. We always were doing something. We taught our kids to ski right off the bat. Every one of our kids can ride motorcycles, you know, and every one of them are involved in stuff and in ministry. We ride out a semi for 5 years. We traveled to camps and did outreaches. Semi. We had a worship band. We had a stage that came off the side of the sea. We had two big climbing walls built on the front of the semi. And that was what we did for 5 years. And, you know, until our kids started getting married, well, then the ministry went on to Pocatello, Idaho. It's still running, you know, that truck. But to just keep them involved in priorities and follow Jesus as you go. And you just can't go wrong. You know, Keith and I, we back our stories, and it's fun, isn't it, Keith?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well.
It, just out of a desperation to watch them grow.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. 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 For my sons, you know, they're 40 plus, and for them to say, Dad, have you got a minute to pray? You know, how cool is that?
Yeah.
You know, it's great, you know. Yeah, no, the mentoring is huge in our lives. And I didn't realize what was going to happen to my son. So once they got married, holy mackerel, things change. You know, the priorities are different. And, you know, and I wasn't quite ready for that. You know, our boys, we did a lot. We did a lot of bike trips. We did stuff together like crazy. And then once they got married, the Bible's right. They need to cut those ties and cleave to their wives and their husbands. And that's what they did. And they did it well, you know. And, you know, people say, oh, yeah, so many of every kid's going to go haywire and you're going to lose them and everything else and all this stuff. Well, you know what? We got six kids that are very, very powerful champions in their communities.
Well, I think, so I started talking about this culture of this logging camp where these guys are locked away up at the end of a lake in the mountains and they just, you know, they just become something. And then, so God's like, so how do I change a family culture from being something like this or mix it and make it better? That's probably what his goal is. Oh, well, we'll just invent marriages and mix families together. And it's like, wow, it's so interesting once your kids marry. And even though, like, they're of the same process and they've been raised in churches, but they're just completely different, whether it's your daughter's husband or your son's wives. It's just another whole culture comes into your family and changes it. And you know, it's
you respect and embrace that.
Oh, yeah.
And,
it's so interesting.
Yeah. And watch how your grandkids show up.
Yeah.
You know?
And then and to watch them and that whole thing. And you have to fit in and you have to adjust some of your things. But it's not anything anybody ever talks about when you're at any point is that you have to embrace this other family culture coming into your family and figure out how to make it amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been amazing, but we've all had to communicate and we've all had to learn and we've all had to have discussion. And it's just another phase of life that's just so interesting.
When you guys talk about mentors, and Harold's mentioned a few he had, I was kind of curious, you know, like, so April 27th, I'm doing an S&P Cornerstone event, bringing in speakers from all over. And then Sunday morning, I'm doing I'm going to call it a Sunday service because I don't know what better to call it. But I have the cowboy preacher, Joshua Allen, coming. I have Tanner Nade from around here coming. And then Cam Milliken, who most people won't know, but he was the man who said grace before my show in Edmonton. And they're going to talk about, you know, as we narrow in on the topic, and I'm going to give them a little bit of room to move, the Bible, Jesus, and how they relate to the Cornerstone, right? And that's going to be the Sunday morning service, which is free to the public if they want to come. And if we pack the house, great. And if 10 people show up, I'll hope the right 10 people. Sorry?
What house?
That remains to be seen. Oh. I believe by the time this releases, it'll be the Kinsman Hall. And so it's going to be... you know, not a giant house by any stretch, but certainly my first foray into something that I'm very curious about. And the reason I picked those three is in their own ways, they've really been influential in my journey and mentorship of how I've got to where I am, where I'm so freely to sit here and just listen to you three talk about it and not be like, I need to get the heck out of here, right? Like once upon a time, that was definitely there. Mentors come in many different forms. You know, some of us, it was our dad right from the beginning. Others, it was a hockey coach, a business owner, you know, and on and on and on. When you go across the course of your life, does one stick out to you that like you, whether you were on the wrong path or whether you just need a little bit of guidance, that you, and if there's one that sticks out, what was it that they got your attention? Like what grabbed your attention to make you go, oh, I should maybe pay attention to what this man's saying. I'd be really curious on that.
Yeah. One of those would be the shop foreman when I started as a young 17-year-old in a GM dealership. He says, when you're doing things, you got to make sure it's the best you can do. And that kept me all the way.
Yeah.
Do it the best you can do. Just take no shortcuts. Make sure it's right.
And before I skip past it, was people telling you different before that or nobody had put that level of firmness of
my uncles also did that. My especially my Uncle Norman, you know, which is you learn to do something, you do it a certain way and that makes sure it works. And, but John de Bruin was my shop foreman and that guy, he got my respect. He was the guy that said, you know, I got to tell you one story about that that really comes through. I got a few speeding tickets. The one time I was going south to the farm because one of the grain trucks had broken down. So I'm going to go out and get the grain. It's Sunday morning, 7 o'clock. So I'm heading out there. And of course, we're doing almost double the speed limit, a quick hurry. And these lights coming up behind me. I thought, what the heck? Didn't even think about it being a police car. It's 7:30 in the morning. They're not out there, right? So I just drop a gear and put the hammer down. So now I'm going way above the speed limit. And so engine doesn't quite work right. I got a plug wire up against the header or something. So I'll just throw it in neutral, coast down. I'll fix that, make my way to the farm. I get over the hill. I stop. I'm just about to get out of the car. And this police car comes over and he turns the lights on then. We're in trouble. So he gives me a ticket. Says, you got to go to court because, you know, we're doing this speed. So he says to me, you know, I wasn't so mad when I come up behind you, but at 90 mile an hour, I seen a puff of smoke and you took off like I'm standing still. That made me mad. So Monday morning comes around. I'm at my stall at the shop. This police car comes in the front door and Johnny DeBruin's talking to him. And Johnny says, Brian, come here. This guy says his car had a problem in the high speed chase the other day. Can you look at it? Well, that big, tall policeman says, this is the kid. And Johnny Bruin says, I figured so. He can fix it. So we got his car to do over 125 mile an hour after that. Maybe do 95 mile an hour flat out before. So we got to do about 125. So we're out for road testing it, and he's driving it, the policeman. So we get up about 125, 126, and he says to me, I had to catch that Camaro of yours now. And like an idiot, I said, no, that's when I shift to fourth. So anyhow, what became nice, of that, nice. Though, I got to tune a lot of police cars after that. So doing it right helped. But I still like to drive fast. Yeah.
When I was a teenager, I was done school for the year, and it was June, and we were just getting out, and maybe a day or two after we got out of school, and a neighbor came over to our house and wanted to talk to me, and so I came out, and here was a neighbor named Jim Hingston, and Jim Hingston was our local plumber. He asked me if I wanted a job for the summer, and I really needed the job. I thought, wow, my dad was a garbage collector, and up till about then, I thought, I'm going to be the best garbage collector ever. You know, my dad kind of watched. He did a good job of it. My dad could really, when he collected garbage, he'd done a great job. He cleaned people's backyards up, and he did a good job of it. And as a, you know, 10, 12-year-old kid helping your dad, you just want to be as good as your dad. Well, when Jim Hingston come to our yard and asked me if I wanted to come and work for him for the summer, I thought, wow, I didn't know I could even rate to be a plumber, you know. And anyway, he offered me a job, a good pay. And I was hesitating to take it because there was a big, big problem. And that was Jim Hingston was one of the only born-again Christians in our community. And you knew he was a Christian. They were in church every Sunday. They had this weird thing going on once a week called Bible studies. And it was all weird. And our whole community thought, they are one weird bunch. And we mocked their kids and made fun of them a lot. And yet I ended up taking the job. And I kid you not, Sean, that summer I learned so much about being a tradesman. First thing he did was give me a little notepad, put it in my pocket and a pen. And he said, Harold, if you have questions, write them down. And then we'll talk about it at coffee time or on the trip home. And he says, don't ask me crazy questions when customers are around. That's the time to be working. You talk to me, write your notes down. I don't mind you writing down questions. Keep that notepad handy. And then one day he had me doing some work at the Watcher School. I had to jackhammer up a chunk of cement and expose some piping that we had to replace and so on. He said, I'm going to go do a couple service calls. I'll be back in about an hour and a half. He gets back. I'm sitting on my butt outside the school. I had it all done. I couldn't wait to show him how I had everything done good. And just like he wanted. Well, he was glad with that, but he said, Harold, nobody wants to pay a tradesman to be sitting on their butt. You grab a shovel, hammer, you do anything you can, but do not sit around doing nothing. Tradespeople are working people, and that's it. So, you know, he mentored me those years in some pretty good stuff. And when I saw him at mealtime stop and put his head down and pray, you know, I thought, wow, you know, you think about that, you know, and he did everything. He never heard a cuss word out of his mouth, no matter what. And so I learned a lot from him, and I do credit Jim Hingston for the fact that today I have four sons that are incredible tradesmen. And the mentoring he did just in those 2 months to help me to like that rudder, set my destiny, set my life in a path that later on when I got offered a job to be a plumber in Kindersley, I grabbed it and I had the confidence to go into it. And yeah, that's what I am today. I'm a plumber, sheet metal worker, and my boys have excelled far beyond what I ever could have hoped them to be.
What years were you in Kindersley?
Kindersley? I was in Kindersley from 76 to 96.
Right after I left. I was there 75, 76.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who'd you work for?
Keller and Cameron.
Oh, yeah.
Pontiac dealer.
Yeah,
you know, to the audience, I hope they get the feel of what McDonald's coffee row or something in the morning would be like. They just sitting here lightly saying, what years were you there? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a small world.
Yeah, it certainly is. Do you think of a mentor when you look back in life? Or maybe you still have?
Oh, my. Well, it's, you know, you never use the words, but it's been a continuous life of mentorship. And I was just thinking as these guys are talking that, you know, my dad wasn't one that would sit down and write out a list of things that he wanted to teach you and bring out this book or that book. But he, you know, you worked alongside him. He always made the things that were important available. I mean, we didn't have a lot of money back then. The farm survived and we always had food, but you know, he just made it possible to be part of church functions and youth functions. And like I said, we had so many great people back then. And then, you know, an uncle, I had two uncles lived a mile each direction, and one, they were completely opposite and exactly the same. Two of his brothers and so they taught you, you know, you just remember little things that you learned from them and of so many things. But, you know, there's just so many people. If I had to pick one name, Merv Lowen was a big part of Lloydminster. He was a school teacher and the Lloyd Comp and a big part of the church. And he was kind of our youth leader at the time. And he was just one of those guys that he just did. And so you just learn to do. And his desperation to have a place for his kids to be successful in. That was his goal all through. We watched that there had to be a great church for his kids to be successful in. There had to be a great high school for his kids to be successful. And then he got involved in a university before his kids got there because he was desperate that his kids had a place to be successful. And I think that was, he was just always there. And so that's one name. If we want to pick a name out of everybody that ever made a church successful, makes successful people. Anybody that's part of an organization that has successful people in it are all mentors in one way, even though you might not have related to them, but you became something because of somebody's desperation to make a great organization, a great life, a great system. So
I don't normally chime in, but I think of I've had him on the podcast a long time ago, and I assume he understands, but who knows? Maybe he'll listen to this, maybe he won't. But I had a coach back in junior hockey, so I played, now it's U18, but I played midget back then, and you can see my stature. I was a small little kid, defense, and so I got cut, and I remember getting told, you know, if you're 4 inches taller and different things like that, and it was tough to hear. And when I was done hockey, I was done hockey. I was just like, I'm putting this part of my life away. And I went to the bottom of partying and working a job to put a little bit of coin in your pocket. But when I think back to it, I didn't have a direction. And on a Friday, my father called and said, "Hey, there's this guy, Larry Wintoniak. You remember him?" And I'm like, "Yeah, the coach from LaRange." "Yeah, he wants you to come play in Dryden, Ontario." I'm like, "Oh?" And he goes, "Do you want to go?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll leave Monday morning." And I remember I couldn't believe how quickly, just a little bit of belief in your ability, how quickly you could change from like, and I'm not sitting here saying I was the worst human being on the earth, but I wasn't really, I was working a job, showing up most of the time sober, I would say, but we were partying pretty hard. We were going out every night. We were drinking and probably smoking at that time. I have no idea. I can't remember back then now, but like, it just, I was getting a feel for what independence felt like away from my parents and pushing against things and seeing what it was and of age. Right. And then you go to Ontario and, Larry, for those of you who don't know him, he's this big 6 foot man. And even to this day, built, he runs a gym in Kindersley, I think. Sorry, Larry, I think you're still in Kindersley. And he is like, I'll put it to you this way. We worked out, we had two different workouts in the morning. Half the group would go, early, then the next group would go next, and then you'd have hockey practice. You'd show up, he'd already be in there working out, and he'd work out beside you. And then the next group, he'd do the same thing. Then he'd be on ice. And he won Allen Cups with Thunder Bay back in the day, not because of his skill, because of his work ethic. And when we got to Ontario, lots of guys hated him. I needed it. He was just like, "Listen, we don't drink. You get a green light maybe once a month. And when you do that, you leave this town because you're not making a bad image of our hockey team." And for lots of guys, they struggled with that. For me, I needed it. As soon as I embraced it right away, it's like, all right, that's the rules. I was, let's go. And I wrote a paper about him once in college, just about, there's been lots of, when you talk about mentors, there's lots of people, dad to this day, when you're really in trouble or you got something on your mind. I've been blessed with 3 older brothers, a father, an extensive family, my sister, I've got this huge resource of people that I can reach out to. And dad's certainly there. But at an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, when he thinks he knows the world and he's got it by the tail, to have a grown man say, "Nope, you're not doing that," and then call you on your BS anytime it happened. And so you had to try and live up to that. Like, that was, it took me from heading one way, and who knows where that way would have got me to and how long it would have taken to turn the course, to taking me and doing a 180 and off you went the other way. And that was just a little bit of belief in a person. And for me, that mentor really changed the trajectory of my life at a pivotal moment, I would say. And no those kidding. Pivotal moments come along quite often, more than we probably think.
Yeah, that's just so cool, the way you said that, because when I was a kid too, I was I started farming with my dad when I was 8 years old. He had me on an old tractor and a disker doing disking and so on. Later on in high school, there was a guy named Grant Smith, and he'd always get me to do farming for him. And one day, one of the first times, he says to me, "Harold, meet me east of town." And he says, "I need you to do some summer fallow for me." So I met him out there after school, or Saturday morning, I think it was. And I get out there and I cannot believe my eyes. He has got this massive four-wheel drive tractor. He's got a cultivator behind it, and then he's got a rod weeder behind that and a set of harrows behind that.
How old were you?
I don't know. I think I must have been about 16 years old. And he says to me, "I need you to do this quarter section, get it done, you're done today." I said, "Grant," I said, "I never drove nothing like that before. That's too big. I can't do this." He said, "Harold, get the hell up in that tractor. I know you can do it." And I got up in that tractor and I did that whole quarter section. I didn't hit one power pole or ditch or nothing, you know. I did that whole field. But that guy believed in me so much. He just said, "Harold, get up, get the hell up in that tractor and get this done." And that was it.
Sometimes when someone tells you that, when you believe in you, you make damn sure you do it.
Well, you got that
best
right.
You can. You
do. My focus was, I did not want to disappoint him, yeah.
I got to tell you a story about Zane. When he was between 13 and 14, he went from like the shortest guy in the school to this guy that weighed 180 pounds and could lift freaking small block Chevys. I mean it, like. And I got him a 57 Chevy that I put away for him when he was a year old. And I says, "What do you want? Do you want like this Camaro or you want this 50? I'll take 57 Chev. Okay, let's go get it." He looked at me. So we went up to a friend's place where I'd put it away and we dragged it on the trailer.
Oh, wow.
He spent from the time he was 13 years old till he was graduating high school. He put the last piece of chrome on that the day he graduated high school. That's what got him in the cars.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. That's something.
To just stick on that for a second, that's forethought.
Yep. Yeah.
You think of what we're lacking in our world today. It, to me, I could be wrong on this. Curious your thoughts. Is like we don't think of 2 years down the road, let alone like you're talking like 15 years down the road. Like that's that's a pretty cool that's a cool story.
Yeah, yeah. We put it away if you ever wanted it. And I had a Camaro, a 73 Camaro, sitting in the garage. I said, "You could do that one, or you could do the 57. "Oh, the Camaro is yours, Dad. Where's that 57? So we hooked the trailer on. We drove all the way up to near Loose Land there and picked it up and put it on the trailer and dragged her home. And he started on it. And what really got him hardened to bodywork was he had a problem with the roof where it had a dome in it that somebody had whatever done to it. We called my uncle Bruce up, who was a retired body man. And he spent a whole day with Zane. He was from PA. He spent a whole day with Zane working that, heating it, shrinking it, molding it till that roof was perfect. That roof to this day is still perfect. And Zane says, "That got me into metalwork." So.
Attention to detail.
Yeah.
If I was building the roof, I'd probably just be like, "I'll live with a bubble," you know?
He's still that way. He's putting a car together for a customer and I think it's fine. No, I still got this much time to finish that perfect. And we're building my wife's 52 Henry J, and I'd spent about 3 months on it doing what I thought was the finished body work. Getting, you know, it's close. And he come home from, I sent him to Wyotech down in Wyoming to take body and suspension. He come back from that and I told him, "Well, we got mom's car ready for paint." He walked into the shop, walked around at once. "I think I need about another 2 months, Dad, before this is ready for paint."
Whoa.
Go at her.
How long have each of you been married? Oh, I'm putting everybody on the spot.
This May.
Oh, I wish
50
everybody.
Years this May.
I wish everybody could have seen that. Yeah. I should have prepped all the boys before I answered that question.
44, in case you just.
44.
50 in May.
50 in May.
48.
And 48. Okay. I think that's super cool. What is it about, or what can you tell, or what can you distill to younger couples that have helped with your marriage? Because to stay together that long, for three of you to be sitting in here to stay together that long. I think of it as a bit of an anomaly. I'm not saying that it's extremely rare, but the statistics are starting to show the divorce rate not slowing down but going up. You know, we just went through a dark time in COVID and mandates and lockdowns and on and on. There was tons of people get divorced and walk away from people they love, and you know, and on and on it goes. And one of the things I really admire is the fact that, you know, combined, that's what, 130 some years, maybe a little 140 some years of marriage knowledge, right? So what is it that you can say to a younger man about marriage that you're like, this is what's worked for us?
Every morning, get up and tell her, good morning, good looking. Do it every day.
Yeah. Well, I think too that Diane and I spend a lot of time in prayer together. We don't leave the house. I don't leave the house in the morning without us holding each other and praying together for each other. Yeah. I learned something here not long ago from an old cowboy who's been married for 45, 46 years. Him and his wife did some messages here at our church in town. And something he said to me was so cool that when you're a Christian, if you seek the Holy Spirit is what God left us and when Jesus went. And that Holy Spirit, if both of you have embraced the Holy Spirit, that Holy Spirit's not different in one than the other. If you both have embraced the Holy Spirit into your lives, that Holy Spirit will keep you together. That Spirit, that'll help you to be respectful. That Holy Spirit will help you with pride and arrogance and selfishness, all of it. It just sort of dissolves because, you know, I look out for my wife. I look out for her best. Well, whatever I do, my decisions are based on what's best for her, you know. Well, last night, I know I had a little bit of a blurb last night. I was heading home last night, and after fasting for a few days, she was putting on a steak supper for me. My wife's an incredible mentor also. And so anyway, I get home last night. And the steak is still in the sink and the barbecue's not burning. And I'm thinking, what? Usually she's got a nice steak and it's ready to put on the plate. You know, it's done just right. I got a sweet potato there and some, and we sit and have a nice supper and it's nowhere close. And then I look at my phone. Oh, Harold, so-and-so called. She needed to talk. So I'm just out talking with her for a bit. I'll be home as quick as I can. You know, I definitely know I'm a priority in her life, but when mentoring comes and somebody needs her, she was willing to drop it, and I had to sit. And so what I did, I just sort of took those steaks out, started the barbecue, and got things going because I knew when she got home, she's going to be a little bit tired out, eh? Mm-hmm. So it's just about knowing where you kick in and where you don't and put selfishness aside and be the person that God's called you to be, you know? My kids need to see that. My family, everybody, you know, they need to see that God is the glue. God is the strength. And when you do that, your marriage, honestly, we've been married 48 years and we go on road trips and anything. And we have the time of our life. When she's on the back of my Harley, which she's been since she was 16 years old, and she is the best rider ever. When I'm stressed, she can tell it. When I'm in a storm or something, she can tell and she'll massage my back. She'll put her hands on my shoulders and pray for me. And, you know, she just knows me better than I know myself almost, you know? And I could never ask for a better wife and partner. And it's great.
yeah, I would have to say commitment is the word I would use. Mm-hmm. And it's a big part, bigger part of our lives than, you know, even our faith in Christ is a commitment. You know, you see these young people want proof of this and proof of that. And you know what? We don't get 100% proof of things in everything in our life. We, at some point, you just got to make a commitment. And I believe that's what it is that that makes it in law. There's a billion things that come every day and go around it, but a commitment to a life. And so that means, like, you have to be part of the same things. You have to be involved in the same things. You have to do the same things. You can't be away. You can't be apart. And, I mean, people have been married a long time and they are apart. But I think that brings lots of struggles. Yeah. And certainly if you get listening to do different things, you know, your mindset gets separated and different. And there's so many things that can come between. So you got to work at it for sure. And but you know, we've enjoyed the same things through most of it. We've had a commitment and a desperation for our kids and now for our grandkids and for those around us. And so, but it's a commitment to something that you've said and you've done, and there's just not an option. Like you just, so you look for ways to make it better, not ways to bring things in between and make issues.
Yeah, exactly.
And our Christ is so forgiving to us in every moment and everything. And so, you know, that becomes a part of what you do and how you function.
Yeah, trust is the other one too. Like when I was working, we were living in North Battleford until our kids were done high school, and I was teaching in Saskatoon yet. So I'd be gone for 4 days out of a row of 5 days. I'd leave Monday morning, come back home Friday night. And trust that, you know,
yeah,
there's nothing going on. And I got to tell you one story about that, because after we moved to Saskatoon, I was working with my boy in Calgary for a couple of weeks over the summer. Is that when you're teaching, you got the whole summer off, right? So I'd work for him for 4 or 5 weeks and then come back home. Somebody phoned me and said, you know, I saw your wife down with this fella down at the restaurant and having lunch and supper. And, you know, what's this all about? I says, it's probably one of her friends. Why? You're not worried about it? No, I ain't worried about it. It's real trust, not that phony trust. Eh? It's real trust.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
She went to Mexico here this last 2 weeks with two girlfriends of hers. And she says, you know, I'm going to go without you. This is the first time we've been away on a trip without each other. I says, well, no big deal. Enjoy yourself, because I've got a bag of work I got to get done. So when you get back, then we'll spend some time together. So this is one of the days we actually spent some time together. Drove in here yesterday and stayed with her sister and had a nice meal last night, nice breakfast this morning. And we'll spend some more time this afternoon before we head back.
Yeah. I believe that God didn't make a bunch of crazy rules. He just stated a whole bunch of facts.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And if you do this, this happens.
Yep.
And if you do this, this happens. And if you do this, life will be even more amazing.
Yeah.
And so it's just more amazing every day.
Exactly.
Then he brings along grandkids.
Yeah.
Wow. And if you were doing that apart, I can't even imagine
that.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So,
you know, we were growing up and we got married back in 1976, July of 76. Everybody knew my background. They knew Diane, everything. And they said, yeah, that's a marriage that is never going to last. Yeah. And they were right. It wasn't going to last. It was right out of the gate. It was heading for destruction. And we often say we're like a massive train wreck. And yet once we surrendered our lives and became Christians, it's like now two of those jet lines behind a jet airplane. Now they've become into chemtrails, or what are they called? sorry, I said that wrong, didn't I? No. But anyway, and we work side by side. And I think the kids my age and my wife's age, the young people, they're not young no more, they're my age. But a lot of them, I'd say 90% of them, they've got solid marriages. They're good. They're together. They're with our high school friends, everything. And I sometimes think they must have thought, if those two can make it, we can make it. Because really, it's amazing. And, you know, growing up, a lot of the people in my, they were broke up and marriages are falling apart, everything. But the kids, the young, well, I keep saying kids, my friends that I grew up with, went to school with, majority of them have got really good marriages, I think. They're at least they're together, right? And sometimes I wonder, you know, God, you work through us too. And you help to be an example to train wreck people who can build something. And mentor and make a difference in life.
Yeah.
Am I doing the math right that all of you got married at when you were 20 years old?
Yep. Yeah.
I was a couple months short of.
So you were 19 and change.
Sean, my wife was 17. Her dad had to sign a paper to let her get married.
But you knew.
She turned 18 shortly thereafter, but.
Yeah. We were engaged. My wife was 17. I was 19.
Yeah. Yep. And, same thing. Yeah.
I laugh at the pastor that did our premarital. He wasn't that old, but he kept saying, now you realize that love isn't about feelings, and I'm 19 years old. I laugh about that every time I think about it, because at 19, there's just a lot of feelings going on. Yeah. And if God didn't make us that way, you know?
Yeah, we had our first girls just almost a year to the date to getting married within a couple of weeks. And then Zane came along 2 years later, and then Anita, and then we adopted one, so.
Well, to me, that, you know, something that's very different from your lives to today's culture is, you know, just take, like mom and dad were married at 20 as well, right? It's very much a cultural thing, I think. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, like I was 29, I think. Lots of people are in their early 30s. It's almost like, nope, you need the extra decade to find the person, to get on with it, whatever. Mm-hmm. And back, I couldn't have wrote the script any better for my life, so I'm not going to argue with it. Just that the three of you have something completely different. A decade earlier, you've already got a whole brood of kids running around, and that's a definite change.
We need an extra decade with our grandkids. That's the amazing part.
Yeah, exactly. An extra decade with our kids.
Yeah, like my oldest grandchild is 22, going to be 23. I think he just turned 23. Next one is 17. No, 19. 19 now. And then the next one is just turned 10. And then little Scotty just turned 8.
How important do you think it is to be around your grandkids? You know, when we're talking mentors.
Lots.
To have that figure, because you all went up against your fathers. Huh? You know, I'm sure at times you listened to everything they said, and at other times you were just rebelling against the world. Yeah. Yep. How important was it to have an older figure that you could be like, "Dad's just driving me nuts," and well, he'll do that. You know, I don't know. You three know the playbook on that. But how important has that been?
Well, I think of my oldest grandson Jacob, who's named after my dad and my grandfather, and him and I rebuilt a car. Took an old car that was pretty much a wreck, and we got it going for his first car. It had a 6-speed standard in it. None of his friends had anything like that, you know. It was a cool little Mazda.
Kids these days don't even know what a standard is.
And he is so good. And we had a dent in the back of the hatchback, and he said, "How are we ever going to get that out, Grandpa?" And so I said, "Well, let's try this." And so I pulled my Suburban up to the back of it, and I hooked a ratchet strap onto it and hooked it into where the dent was. And he said, "Are you going to pull back on that now?" I said, "Nope." I made it nice and tight. And I stood on that ratchet strap and I just jumped on a little lightly and that popped right out. "Grandpa," he said, "that's great." And so we did the alternator. We did a bunch of work on it. And I remember him saying to me one day, "Grandpa, can we do this every weekend?" You know, and today that boy who's 18 years old already has his pilot's license.
Oh, sweet.
You know? And that's how ambitious, and just by building a culture of there's lots in you, you can do this.
Yeah.
And seeing dad was a amazing at being a MacGyver, right? Yeah. You got a problem. You know, I remember we buried the truck. We were out checking, I want to say cows. We might have been building fence. Anyways, we drove down in the ravine, buried the truck. And we're like, you know, miles from home. And then when you get there, what's going to pull you out? The truck. So you're like, okay, what are we going to do? We had a tractor on the other side of the quarter. And so we walked there. When we got back, I'm going, "Dad, we have nothing to pull it out. We have, what are you going to do? Push on it?" Like, and he took wire and braided it so that he could hook it on to the back and pull this truck. It's just his ingenuity. So now when you walk into a problem, it's like, well, actually, we, you know, what do we got to use? Like, you already, like,
exactly.
And that come from being, you know, when I hear your stories, I'm like, that came from watching dad do it time and time again, where, you know, why don't you use what you got? What do we got out here? Let's see what we can figure out and figure it out. And that's a lost skill if you don't see somebody do that.
Back in the day, you could boost a vehicle by running the bumpers together and using one cable. Because nothing melted and everything connected.
They weren't plastic.
They were plastic, right.
You could run the bumpers together.
You push the bumpers together and then you just need the positive cable. Yep.
So you could use your
Or a crowbar. Like if you needed two cables to reach the batteries, you just drove the trucks together.
Yep.
Like, Yep. Who does that?
Yeah.
You can't do it.
You can't do it.
No.
Maybe the trailer hitches if you ran them together. But anyways, that's the wrong
When you get to looking like you're fixing a problem, my son-in-law wanted a different engine in his. He had a 75 Scout, which had that international engine, which was like a 10 miles to the gallon.
We had a 68.
You know, and torque engine, but no speed. So I put a 5.3 out of a 2010 Chevy into it, fuel injected with a 6-speed. But they all said, there's nothing to make that 6-speed work the Dana transfer case. And that was on Thursday afternoon. And a guy that was a 4x4 expert had come over and, well, there's nothing you can do with that. Monday morning, he came in. I had the transfer case bolted to the transmission.
Oh, nice.
I cut off the old output shaft out of the old transmission and put the two together on the press. And then I put on a lathe and built an adapter with the right bolt pattern on it, put the two together. When I ended up, I had 2,000ths run out. The old gear had about 22,000ths run out when I took it out. I had less than 2,000ths run out when I put it back together. I finished the vehicle on a Friday, and I was going to take it to West Virginia. Went to fill it full of gas, and all of a sudden the oil pressure went away. And this was a 60,000K motor that was supposed to come out of a 60K. Probably never had two oil changes in his life. So I had another one sitting in the shed that I had polished, ported, ready to go, like a high output engine. Saturday, we pulled that one, the old one out, put that one in. Sunday morning, 3 o'clock, I took off at West Virginia. And that's, the truck's been on the road ever since. That was 8 years ago.
Wow.
So you make it work. Like you said, there's some way to do it. Give me a lathe and some metal, we'll make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. You know, just to make things happen and to let your kids see that and watch that, you know. We're driving our semi and we're that semi we were doing for 5 years and we get to Watrous, Saskatchewan, and we're doing a 1 week vacation Bible school for the Baptist Church in Watrous, and we're getting low on fuel. And, you know, I'm thinking, where are we going to get this? This is $600 for a tank of fuel, eh? And the day we're about to leave, a guy comes up to us and says, hey, you guys need some fuel? And I said, yeah, we sure can. He said, well, you pull up to here and we'll fill you up. And they took care of filled those tanks right full, of fuel. And just for our kids to see that, you know, to watch how God works and prepares, you know, it's absolutely amazing. Blaine, we're at Slave Lake and we stopped in at the McDonald's on the highway for lunch with the Semi and the Suburban and a few other vehicles with our team. And we pull in there for supper, and a guy comes up to us and says, what are you guys all about? What's this? You know, our Semi had massive murals all over it and everything. And we told him what we're about. He said, well, if I pay all your expenses in a hotel room, would you stay the night and do an outdoor concert for us tonight? Sure, we'd love to. Any opportunity, you do it, eh? And so he did that. And my son, Blaine, is up there playing my old bass guitar. And a guy comes up to me while we're sitting up and said, hey, is that kid up there? He says, is that his guitar, his bass? I said, no, it's not. Oh, he said, okay. He went and got him a brand new bass and gave it to him. Like, you know what? Life, things like that, when God kicks in and does that, you know, like that does nothing but grow their faith. And they know that ultimately, no matter what we go through, God's in charge and we're going to get through this somehow.
Yeah. That's what my wife keeps telling me. She says, God gave you the ability to do that. You use it.
You use it. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And share it, eh? And that's what you do. And that's so good.
When you look at the world of today, now you boys have been around for some time. And I don't know if you had this one on your bingo card, all the different things that are going on right now. We can just talk about carbon tax for Pete's sake, but whatever. When you look at the world today, what do you think we're missing? Like, what do you think, society as a whole, or is it Justin Trudeau? Is it the Liberal Party? Is it politics? You've been around and got to see different iterations of politics shift and move and everything else over the course of your lifetimes.
I think, Sean, what we're looking at is you're looking at somebody that wants to control us, because in the 70s, we're told it's going to be an ice age, and then the 80s, we're going to run out of gas, and then the 90s, all of a sudden, it's global warming, and then now it's CO2. Well, 0.0014% of CO2 change is what humans and all our production is changing. We need more CO2 in the atmosphere to give us better plant growth, not less. But they've all bought into this somebody decided that was it. And I don't know why we believed them. Why? Where did it come from? Who decided that that was the problem? Because it's not. All the farmers in the world know that. You want a plant to grow, you pump CO2 into it. Pretty simple. And do they want to get rid of plants? Is that what their object is? Like, who's making these decisions? Who decides that's it?
Well, we got a leader that really, he's brought up in a very dysfunctional home. He has no idea about family, has no idea. He doesn't have an inkling of what love means and caring for others. His life has been a disaster, as it continues to be a disaster. And so one guy named Klaus Schwab tells him, you can be a hero, but you got to do this to your country. And this is what you'll get out of it. And he's destroying us all because of his relationship with this guy. I'd be the first if somebody held him down. You know what he needs? He needs a good spanking. He needs a spanking so hard that he won't sit for a week. And I kid you not, he's probably never had that. But that is the most arrogant, insubordinate, out of control kid. That's all he is a kid. I have a lot of sons and a lot of young men in my life that could go, every one of them could go in a room with him individually, and within 5 minutes, he'd be out of there with his tail between his legs, because he just has nothing going for him except the people around him that are doing whatever they're doing to that poor kid.
But he's only managed it because he controlled the information.
Yeah.
And so now, I think for the first time in history, the king doesn't control all the information, and we're seeing some waves they've driven us for the last 20 years in this plan. And so for the first time, there's a Sean Newman podcast that at this point has the ability to get out, and you know, he's trying to control that too. But it's all about the information that all of our kids have been fed in everything. And so... You know, if we allow the Jordan Petersons and and we allow Christ's words to be spoken and all these things, people are going to – it's going to be a hard move to turn them around again. But with the power of some different information, he's not going to – they're not going to be able to do this. And that's what we're seeing happening. But – they're desperate, and it's evil. They're so evil that they are desperate, and they're not just going to say, okay, you're right, we were wrong. No, that's not what it's about. They're so deep. They're so far into the...
The cruelest of animals would never mutilate their own children. They would never do what he's allowed to be done to our children. Instead of educating and helping them, now the people who want to educate and help them are condemned and put in jail. Yeah. But instead, why do they want to mutilate them? It's all for money. There's no good in it. Those children are going to be on medication all their lives. They're going to be in counseling all their lives. There is nothing positive about it whatsoever, except money.
From food to the climate lie.
To everything.
It's just they've controlled it all for just about long enough, but by the grace of God and some strong people, I believe that...
You give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves.
Yeah. We took a quick little break and we were talking about Justin Trudeau and the state of politics and everything else. Looking at the near future, you know, are you hopeful then? Or are you the state of where we're at and the things going on in society, where are you boys at?
Well, I'm not as hopeful as maybe a person should be, because I see what's happening and what's being planned and everything. Everything's so obvious what's going on. Back in 1963 or 62, my brother put me on a pedal bike from our farm and rode me the 5 miles into our community. And I got into a lineup in town, and a Prime Minister of Canada came up and he says, "Harold, how are you today and how's your family?" And I'll tell you, that impressed me. That man cared so much that he would come to a little town of Young, Saskatchewan, and he would meet with the people in Young, and he was caring, and he would never shake hands with anybody unless he knew their name first, and you probably guess who that is, John Diefenbaker.
Yep.
And just really was. He died at his desk for his country. And you know what? We don't got a leadership like that right now, or foresight and the visions that the leaders have. You know, maybe if we get a regime change, things could get better, but the plan isn't looking good right now. So we have to take care, mentor our families, be there, be strong. That's the biggest thing I think we do is keep our family strong and our community strong and keep the focus right because, and we got a chance to get out and make a difference. We had family in Ottawa. We have family that have protested in Ottawa and all over the world, you know, but we have to make a stand for righteousness. We really do. Because if we don't, that's telling them, oh, this is easy pickings.
But with the seven premiers kind of standing up against him this last couple of weeks,
yeah,
I wish there was 10. Like, how could you not
right
go against this guy? Like, he's done nothing right for the last 8 years. Hopefully, those seven premiers can bring the others along and really help change something. We don't know. We'll see.
Money talks, eh?
Yeah.
A guy married one of the girls in our church, a Sean. Worked for Samaritan's Purse for lots of years and always had great stories of all the places that Samaritan's Purse would be the first ones on the ground after disasters and uproars and rebellion. And he always said he could see the degradation of or the lessening of Christ's influence in North America, but he always showed up where there was desperation and trouble, God would be there before them. And so, yeah, I mean, I think information is going to change what these guys are able to do to us in the near future. I think it's definitely a time to reset our own minds and COVID, I'm sure one of the big plans of it was to attack the church and put people against each other.
Yeah.
And so I think that if we're men enough and family enough and people enough to bring that back up and to lift that up and that it's going to make the world stronger for sure. There's no doubt about that. I think we're going to live in the best times ever or Christ's going to come soon. And so either way is a win-win. I truly believe that information is going to be the thing that gets us through this. And that's why you're being successful at doing this because you're bringing the local guy to talk. And the availability of information around the world is, there's just been so many lies for 100 years that they've told a vision on television. And it's all been wrong. So I'm hugely concerned, but you know we've got a lot of dehydrated food in our cupboard. So, and if I could ever get my electrician to finish the plumber's job, I'd have my house looked after. And
well, you know, I just as you're talking there, Keith, I think about Jesus and the Last Supper. And something I did a couple messages on it in the last while and foot washing and all that is a powerful, powerful message there. And Jesus sat down at the meal and the supper with his men. And this is just days before they're going to hang him on a cross and take him out. You know, these evil people, the leaders of all the churches at that time didn't like the fact that he's attacking their good lifestyles. And he did it all with truth. And truth wasn't working out for them. Yeah. So they're at this last table and he's got all his disciples around him and there he's struggling with them too. They got a lot of attitude problems. You know, he's got one that's going to, sell him out. Got a couple there that want to be on the right side and left side of him and they're arguing back and forth and some want to know this and they're all just having a real problem and they're sitting down. And yet in those days, you sat down, but there's a pail and a thing at the door to wash your feet off and nobody, usually the lowest of the person there would always take it and say, hey, come here and I'll wash your feet. And they wash each other's feet, but nobody did that. And they're sitting at the table and Jesus, I can see him looking around. Yeah, look at these guys. They're so into themselves, you know, and he had to get them. He had to set them. He had to make the standard at that point because he didn't have much time left. So what does he do? He gets up and he walks to the door, grabs that deep bowl of water. And he takes off his outer clothes and a towel, puts around him, and he goes and washes their feet. And it blew their minds. They couldn't believe it. Like, that's like saying, Trudeau, come on, you got a dozen homes here that need full washing, roof to bottom. Would he ever do that? These houses are dirty. The disciples, their feet were dirty, but today it's our minds and our hearts. Our hearts have gotten hard, and our minds are so full and polluted with garbage. And that's what Jesus has come to do. Let's clean those hearts, soften those hearts, and let's clean those minds. And by washing feet, he washed their feet, and he brought them all, he reset them all to where they needed to be, to be the disciples and the leaders. Nobody ever did what he did with 13 guys, ever, 12 guys, and changed the world forever. There's never been anything so phenomenal.
Speaking of mentoring,
and that night, washing those feet, and it was an incredible move, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts before I let you boys out of here?
Well, in the biker world, you guys, and so on, I'm called the cross man, and I've been building crosses since I was 18 in Vancouver, living in a little shack. I built a cross out of a coat hanger for some reason. I don't know why. And I've been building them ever since, and I've given them out everywhere, and it's kind of like your silver coin. I'd like you each to have one of these as a reminder how much God loves you, because 1 Corinthians 1:18 says the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. But to those of us who are being saved, and I can hear that in every man here, it is the power of God. And that's power you can rely on, you can trust in, and you can take it to the bank. Like my dad used to say, you can take that to the bank, right?
Yep.
They used to say that. My son said, what does that mean? Well, I tell you, it means you can take it to the bank, because it's sure. Yep. It's a sure thing. Yep.
What did you make the crosses out of? Or like, what are these ones made
They're
out of?
They're all made out of horseshoe nails. A biker friend of mine, Larry, he takes and cuts them and welds them, brazes them together with oxyacetylene, every one of them. Then he polishes them, drills them, and clear coats them. And they're done very, very well. Wow. They take 2.5 hours, each one of them, to make. Then I wrap them.
Horseshoe nails? Yeah. Okay. Sean was struggling here with something.
No, I know what a horseshoe, but I'm trying to look at, I'm trying to think of a horseshoe nail.
It's about that long, and it's got a kind of an L on it. It's not a straight, like a nail.
Right.
It's got a little L type.
So that's what this is?
Yeah. It takes 4 nails, have to be cut, and then welded together with copper brazing. And they started out, our kids have all made them, everybody, and our workers. They used to be kind of flimsy. Now they're very solid. They have a lifetime warranty, of course, just like the message of the cross. She's a lifetime warranty. But and then I just want to share with you a little something here. Can I do that, Sean?
I've got three
pieces of tin here, and I'm a sheet metal worker. I have fabricated tin for many, many years. We had a sheet metal shop in our garage, and the kids had a choice to do dishes with mom or help me with the sheet metal building. And my wife did dishes a lot alone, because they love being out in the shop working with me. And you know what that's like.
Yep. Right?
You know, and same with Keith there. Yeah. But I got a piece of tin in front of me here right now. And this piece of tin is about 12 inches by 16 inches. And it's wobbly, flimsy, brand new. And you know what? You think that's kind of a nice looking piece of tin. But really, tell you the truth, it's useless. It is absolutely useless, but you can scrape up dirt with it. You can scoop up dirt, makes a good dustpan. And anyway, then what I do is I take it and I do something to it. I put a cross mark through it on a big break, and I put this X through it. And every sheet metal worker in the world calls it the same thing. Do you guys know what that's called? That's cross breaking. You take a flimsy, floppy piece of tin with no integrity and you cross break it. Now it's got integrity. It's solid, no more wobble, no more wiggle, nothing. And it can be made into something worthwhile. And then what I do is here, this other piece here, it's called an end cap. I put 2 folds, one on each side of it, the 4 sides, and I can attach this to a duct system so that right there, these registers in here, that's part of the system that channels the heat and cool to where Sean needs it in the Sean podcast room. And anyway, I think of this, I'm working on my bench one day, and I look at this and I, holy crap. That's my life. I used to be this floppy piece of tin, Sean. This piece of tin that's useless. But I scraped up a lot of dirt, and I stood on a lot of bar tables and said a lot of stupid things. And I did a lot of things in my life that was not worth a plugged nickel. But one day at the foot of the cross, I was broken. Cross broken. God said, now I got a man with some integrity and I can do something with that guy. Then he surrounded me with good people, a good church, the word of God, and organizations so that I can now be attached to a system and I can channel the love of God and the saving grace into the lives that need it. And I shared that at drug and alcohol detox centers for many years. And that's just kind of how life is. If you're willing to be broken, a good horse is good for nothing till it's been broken. Then it becomes a champion. in our lives, if we're not willing to be broken at the foot of the cross and know what Jesus did, what he shed his blood for, and what he did for every one of us, we'll never be the man that he's called us to be. We'll be a fake imitation and do the best we can. But to be really everything God's made you to be, that's where it's got to start.
Do you ever have days where you're like,
you didn't know what you were asking, right?
Correct. I'm like, if you've been listening since day one, which there are those of you, and there are then those people who came in during COVID, and there's people who left and then came back, and there's just people who showed up today, and you'll be like, oh, this is what the Sean Newman podcast is. This is not always what the Sean Newman podcast was. And some days I'm like, I don't know how I got sitting here. I had no idea. Like, Blue Collar Roundtable with some old boys. I'm thinking, yeah, we're probably going to talk some cars, you know? one of the things I prayed right at the start, I just said this on a podcast a couple times ago, so forgive me for repeating it. But I said, you know, just don't make it dull. I would like an adventure. And, I would say be careful to say those words because you don't know what you're signing up for. And I sit in this room and I'm like, what is going on right now? Like, people are going to think, and you got to do this at the end, Harold. Nope. That was not seen coming by this guy. But that's been the joy of sitting in this chair. The entire gambit of the entire podcast is where it's been taken and directed and everything else. I appreciate you three coming in and doing this. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. I hope the listener has enjoyed it as much as I have. And it's another installment of the Blue Collar Roundtable brought to you by Guardian Plumbing and Heating. It is the third Stefan to come through the doorway, and then of course to have Southgate and Wells join in on this. It's never a dull moment in here. Any other final thoughts from you two before we close her down for the day?
Well, we really need to meet two new men and reinforce, you know, what you're thinking about in your life and how things are gone. Super. I didn't realize you were a Harley rider. I also have a Harley.
Nice. So does Keith. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pretty common.
My son Tyler says it best. I just try not to suck, he says.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Really appreciate you two. And appreciate all of you guys. Great meeting you.